My name is Noah Omri Levin, and you're listening to Digital Marketing Life, my podcast giving you access to the real-life experiences, challenges, and triumphs of the incredible people across our industry. Emily Zimmerman is a serial entrepreneur who, while working a regular gig, has found time either on her own or with her husband to build and/or spin off small businesses over the last decade. As a previous client and a friend, I was always amazed at her ability to deliver unique experiences even in saturated industries. Emily approached me to help scale her Etsy business, and the conversation went in a surprising but fascinating direction. I've been really excited about this episode, and having taken a break for our move across the world, I've been able to check in with Emily to give you a glimpse of what happened a few months after we originally recorded this episode. Enjoy. So, welcome, Emily, to the podcast.
Thank you. Very exciting.
I'm really excited to have you on because you have like a very unique background that, and you're shooting for something now that I don't even have experience in, but I'm really excited to learn more about and talk to you about. But you had reached out to me looking for coaching and information around how to be successful on Etsy with your Etsy shop. I was really excited to have you on because you're sort of a serial entrepreneur and you've done a lot of different things over the years. So what I'd love for you to share, just to give some background on you to the audience that's listening, is just, you know, some of the businesses that you've been running and what you do at your day job, if you will, and then what this Etsy shop is all about.
Sure. So the first business that I actually started, we were living in Atlanta at the time, and I started a dog walking business because it requires very little overhead. There are definitely plenty of dogs to walk, to be walked in Atlanta. So it was something that, you know, was very, I knew that type of thing would grow by word of mouth, and, you know, people and their dogs are a very special type of niche. And once you get in, it could be very lucrative. Down the road, I also opened with my husband a concierge dry cleaning service where we essentially made a relationship with a local dry cleaner, and we established wholesale prices saying that, you know, we'll bring you a lot of customers and so lower your prices. And we established a name and a brand that we certainly thought there was a need for, especially in our area and our community. As it's done, certainly, you know, in the more downtown areas, it's not as prominent. And now I'm currently working, I'm a director of operations at a telecommunications company. And on the side, I do this Etsy business where I create things out of resin. It's a resin or epoxy, some people know it as my main form of working component. And I pretty much make whatever I can think of. I like to challenge myself to make, you know, a lot of, you see online, a lot of people do things, they make geodes and ocean things and whatever, but I like to try to step out of the box and find more unique type of designs. So that's where I'm currently holding now.
Amazing.
The short version.
That's perfect. So I'm going to take you back through a couple of those because one, I have been a customer of Zim's Dry Cleaning in Atlanta and it's amazing. I feel like it revolutionized my life a little bit because the fact that I like didn't have to go out and pick up, and you know, that the value proposition of that business made a lot of sense for somebody with kids and a crazy schedule. But what I'd love to hear is both for the dog walking business and for the dry cleaning business, what was your approach to those businesses from a digital marketing standpoint? Like, how did you get the word out, whether it was digital or it was just how you kind of spread the word and got more business? How did you approach those two?
Sure. So those essentially, for the dog walking, that pretty much was centralized around Facebook. Back at that point, that's where I would really post in different groups. And then, you know, then it kind of went from there. Referrals would go from there. And luckily, I developed a customer base where I was consistently busy, and it was working really well as a nice steady income.
Yeah. Do you think the Facebook groups were a big component of that?
I really do. And especially for things like that, especially, you know, where people can immediately see, you know, you have a profile, you have a real profile with, you know, real friends. And, you know, it's not, you know, like, I don't know if you ever watched the show, like Catfish, like where, you know, they see like these fake profiles of people and they immediately can tell like, this is like not a real human being, you know, it's like they see that you're mutual friends with people. It's community oriented. You have people vouching for you. So I do think Facebook is, especially with that type of thing, like a service that when you come to someone's house is very, it works very well. I feel like people trust it. And especially if, you know, a lot of people are backing up and you're like, yeah, use Emily, use her, she's great. So it's like immediate service filling type of thing.
Meaning the community aspect of that, where people are really, there's a lot of social proof of not only the validity of who you are, that you're a real person, but there's also people around that somebody might be connected to or is part of a similar group and interests that are saying, hey, I've used this person, or this person's legit, this service is great. And that makes a big difference.
Exactly.
Was that different?
And then for the dry cleaning, you know, go ahead, sorry.
No, that's exactly where I was going to go. Was it different with dry cleaning, or was it similar? I'm imagining you didn't find a lot of dry cleaning groups on Facebook.
So it was slightly different with the dry cleaning because we were, our main target was to hit our community first, and that we had a wide reach already because we have two communities that are within driving distance, the Toco Hills community and then the Dunwoody community, that we could reach very easily. People were willing to support us, willing to try us out. That was kind of like an easy customer base to grab. Some people, it was actually not as simple. It didn't grow as quickly in the beginning as we thought, because people were wary and, you know, like people can be particular, and a lot of people are set in their ways, and dry cleaning can be a very personal thing for us. Even my dad was not, he wasn't just going to do us a favor. He's very, you know,
crazy,
particular about
amazing.
His dry cleaning. So yeah, so he's like, you know, I got my dry cleaning place. Why do I need to use you guys? I was like, Dad, because I'm your child. I don't know. Maybe
that's
just give
awesome.
Us a try. But but you know, it's not the person, it's the dry cleaning, so it's the result. So luckily he gave us a try and he was impressed, so he switched over while we were in operation. but once people started it, and then it went back to the Facebook thing. It said anybody that mentioned dry cleaners and any of the local groups, any of the public groups would say them's dry cleaning. And you know, especially being smaller, there's just something like nice about like the, I don't want to call us like mom and pop, but it's just like, you know, like a smaller business that doesn't have a reach around the foot in the door in every single like giant apartment complex and every building in Atlanta. It's kind of like going for the smaller things to ultimately get our way in the door in the larger place to establish the brand, establish the reputation. So that's pretty much how we started there. And we had a pretty wide reach too. We started, the word of mouth really took off.
Yeah, I have to say, I think one thing that just having experienced that one that really made the difference is, so, you know, word of mouth, you hear about it, it's exciting. Like a lot of us knew you because we just lived in the same community. What was really cool though was that the way you operated was that people would text you or your husband. Mm-hmm. And I don't know who was operating it, but it was like so personable and so nice. And there's like clearly a human being on the other end that just wanted to get your clothes back to you as quickly as you needed them. And if there were like weird things that like a button needed to be fixed, you know, you could text whatever you wanted. And it was just this natural way of communicating. It was so convenient. And there's some of those things where like you go to the dry cleaners and you want to get an, you know, specific thing done. And I knew that if I just told you what we wanted, it would get done. It was like a huge relief to just be able to hang that on my front door and not worry about it.
And, you know, I really appreciate the feedback, and that's great. And, you know, that's what I wanted to achieve, you know, because you can create a business, you can create any business, but, you know, I think it was Warren Buffett who said, and I'm very much, you know, a proponent of this, that he said that to succeed in business, you have to do what you say you're going to do. And I think that it goes a little bit beyond as well. So you want to do what you say you're going to do. So if you say you're going to, you know, walk the dog at this time and do this and that, or you're going to get the dry cleaning time and return it, it's, you have to do that component. And then the extra touches are the, you know, making sure like that there's that human component, making sure that the person feels good about, you know, what they're paying for. So it's a simple equation when it comes to services, I think.
It's amazing. No, that's incredible. And the fact that I think you naturally identify and that resonates with you is what makes these businesses work out so well. Because I know, having engaged with them and also seeing you in the community, it makes sense that business like that would work out, because you're sitting behind it thinking about the customer exactly like that. But what you had come to me for is really all about this current business, the resin epoxy art business. And so what I would love to start with, because what I really want to understand in order to kind of help give whatever feedback I can that might be useful, is to understand why are you doing it? And like, what's the objective, but really the why, like what started the whole thing? How did you get into this, and what are you hoping to get from it?
Sure. So the why comes from a few years ago. I saw a couple of things on, I don't even remember if it was, no, you know what? It was, I knew this girl, and she was wearing this necklace that she had made. And it was just, it was just a bunch of pieces of like watch pieces, random watch pieces. And it was set in this clear glass looking setting. And I asked her, what is that? She goes, oh, I just put some watch pieces and I put some resin on top. Is resin. And she explained it to me, and I was like, what a fascinating thing. And so, like, basically you can create a beautiful piece of something, and you can freeze it in time and with this clear, you know, medium. And this is very interesting to me. So I did some research on it, and I was like, there's a whole world of stuff out here. And I, mind you, this is before like the craze really began to happen. All these river tables and the wood with the resin and the resin paintings. You know, I'm not sure how much you've seen of it. I guess I've seen much more of it because I'm much more a part of that world, but it's flooded now. But this was way before that. I'm not saying that was brand, you know, I was revolutionizing the product. I'm just saying it was before it was a wide known thing that people were just really going after. There was just something about being able to take something and freeze it in time. Just, it was just very cool and very malleable. And there were so many different things you could do with it. And I like to think that I'm a creative person. I like to think that I'm artsy, and, you know, there are things that I like to do. I like to take furniture and upcycle it and make it cool. But that's a humongous project. You need a lot of tools. You need a lot of space, which, you know, living in apartments and being as transient as we are, moving around a lot doesn't allow for big work sheds and things like that. A gallon of resin and some pigments and other things is just very easy. The amount of things that you can do with it is just, you could do anything. And I love the challenge. I love, like, someone saying, can you do this? Someone asked me the other day, can you make candlesticks, 6-inch candlesticks? And I said, I haven't done it before, but it's a good idea. Definitely let me look into it. And it's just fun. I want to say it's relatively simple to figure out, at least. I mean, I guess you have to have some sense of color, being able to put colors together and, you know, different things together to figure it out. But I just feel like there's so much you could do with it. And, you know, it's something that I like working with my hands, because you also have to be patient with it as well. You can't just make something in 1 second and it's ready. There's a cure time. So you do something one day, you have to wait a full 24 hours before you can even, like, maybe if you take it out of a mold or until it dries, whatever it is, you have to be patient. And I'm not patient. It's something like exciting. It's something to look forward to. It's something to see if something came out good or not. So there's this like unveiling process as well. So there's a lot of different components that really draw me to it. But I think one of those like freezing objects in time and freezing colors and things really just speak to me as well.
It's amazing because like,
tell me if I missed something.
No, that it sounds wonderful. And it's really interesting to hear the, like, it's just not what I might've expected, but it's a really cool why, and that you really love doing this work. It sounds like this is sort of a, from whatever else is going on in your life, from work or whatever it is, that this is both a hobby and a business and that you really get a lot out of it. You mentioned the challenge is really exciting. And that sounds like something where it's not just you making and selling stuff that's coming from you, but really getting the challenge from being commissioned to try something new and see where people's ideas could inspire you to do something different. Is that accurate to say?
100%. And I have a huge imposter syndrome as well. Like someone purchased something that I had made, someone who wasn't a friend, a random person who found my store and purchased something. It's basically, it was a bowl made out of resin. And I, as much as I love the bowl, I was like, oh my gosh, she's going to get it. And then she's going to see it in real life. And she's going to notice all the little things I notice about it, or, you know, it's going to be imperfect. And I'm not a professional and I just do this as a hobby and I'm not as good as I think, you know, so there is that element of it. And I know you actually had a podcast about imposter syndrome, which I actually did listen to. And that was very interesting, but I know it's not just me who experiences this. So,
do you remember the message that came out of that imposter syndrome episode? No, it's fine. I think it's something that is a lesson I learned and is something that I found to be extremely valuable as a tool whenever that thought entered my head, because it's all of us have this problem at various levels. There might be a level where you don't feel it, but then all of a sudden you reach a new experience and it's sitting there staring you in the face. And what I've realized is that imposter syndrome, and this isn't nice, just as a warning, but imposter syndrome is a person being overly obsessed with themselves, meaning not in the same way we'd think of that as, but in, if I'm walking on stage to give a speech or putting out a podcast or, you know, making a piece of art and sending it to somebody, and I'm thinking, you know, they're going to see this and they're going to realize that I'm fake and that I can't do as well as other people that are out there, or that I'm going to stutter on stage, or who says I'm the person that should be out there speaking on this topic or that should have a podcast. There's 100 different things I can say, but they all start with a focus on me. And the solution to imposter syndrome that I talk about in that podcast, I was talking to Lisa, she was supposed to be on a podcast helping a bunch of franchisees do business better. And what I said is, you just have to stop thinking about you and start thinking about them and realize that you're giving them something that they don't have otherwise. And yes, they could probably get something better somewhere else, but right now they don't have that thing and you're their access point.
And you're the best they can get.
Exactly. And that's okay. That's what they're going to get. That's kind of how we all operate. Like, maybe you're sourcing resin and you could get better resin out there for the right price, but it might take you 10 days to find it. Is it worth it? Probably not. Just get the resin that you need to do the job that you need to do. At the end of the day, you need to focus on what is practical and what's useful. Mm-hmm. And I think saying, you know, hey, I have this passion and I'm going to do my best to put something out to give to this person the best that I've got, that's all you can do. And then you can move on and enjoy the process. And you'll probably end up with a better product doing that than you would worrying about it.
It's very interesting. It's because your natural inclination is to think that it's a self-esteem thing, not so much as a conceited thing. And it's an interesting message.
Yeah. And I'm not saying
they chose that. They want that. They bought it. So, you know, let's go with it.
Exactly. And I'm not saying it's conceit. It's very much it's just a focus issue. It's just a focus on oneself versus focus on outwardly. We all have the problem. Mm-hmm. But when we just readjust the thought of, let me worry less about myself and worry more about them, then it becomes a different kind of worry. Now it's like, let me put my best in here. This is what they're going to get. I might as well enjoy. Sure. And I think honestly, from the businesses you've run and the art that's coming out of this, you can really tell that you have put a lot into it. Like, it's really beautiful stuff. And I'm just looking right now, you have this ocean wave epoxy resin vase that says only one available, and it's in two people's carts, which is like the best ad message.
Is it in two people's carts?
That's what it says on Etsy. So this isn't you putting that in for everybody at home. If you have a store.
Oh, that's very funny. Is it really in two people's carts?
That's what it says. Essentially, what happens is when you're shopping on Etsy and you see an item and two people have it in their cart, but there's only one available or something like that, it'll actually warn you in red text. So it says that right now in red letters right under it.
I did not know that. That's very interesting because I read a post on one of the Etsy seller Facebook groups today that a lot of people do that because I think they hope that you'll send them like a coupon or a discount. I don't know. Like, that's very interesting. I didn't get a notification about that, which goes to show I'm also like not on the ball when it comes to this whole this whole format.
Well, so that's the next thing I wanted to get into, which is this is a hobby, right? You have a job. Your husband's working. Mm-hmm. Also, you've got, I'm sure, a lot going on. That's not just about building these beautiful pieces of art that are also in some cases functional. But what, I'm sure there's also a limit, right? If all of a sudden somebody said, great, I want you to build 100 of those vases, you'd be like, whoa, I don't know if this is the business I want to be in. Or maybe you wouldn't.
Exactly. Well, it's kind of a fear. It's kind of a fear. I've had a lot of people, you know, of course they want money, but they want to build up my SEO. And I'm like, but I don't know if I want to build up my SEO and be like on the front page of Google and stuff like that, because what if I can't handle that? I have like 7 things on my page right now. If I sell out, I'm done, like, which is great. It's a good problem to have, because a lot of the things I do are, you know, I like to make things based on what people are asking for, because another issue that I, you know, wanted to approach you about is figuring out trends. Cause it's not like, oh, dry cleaning or dog walking. It's figuring out what people want, and resin is not a cheap hobby. So, sure. You know, I have a closet full of stuff that, you know, I just didn't do anything. Either like, it's just really not quality enough, or it was just like kind of mistakes and things like that. Or it's just stuff that I don't know how to market. Like, I don't know how to sell it. It's not something people really want. It's just something I felt like making. So really like figuring that out, a very scary, overwhelming thing. Because you might hit it, and that's really great. Success is scary, but at the same time, you might just be. I might just be adding things to my store on a daily basis, and they just sit there and, you know, look pretty, and nobody touches it because it's not what anybody really wants. Like, it's nice to look at, but nobody wants it.
It's a fascinating thought, right? Like, okay, maybe if I do this right, then I'll be too successful and I'll run out of stuff, and then people come to my store and be nothing to buy, and then I've failed them. Right? So it's an interesting problem, but let's just take a step back, which is your why of doing this is because you love the challenge. You love the medium. The idea that you can freeze something in time, I thought was a cool way of putting it. And that
my gosh, do I love like when I make something for someone that they, and when they actually get it and they love it, like that's the best.
Yeah.
Not because I succeeded. They didn't hate it. It was just like, they got to create a piece of art, you know, like through me. And their vision got realized. And, you know, when they love it, it's just like, that's all I wanted. That's what I wanted.
What do you do when that happens? When somebody sends you the feedback that you built exactly what they were hoping for and they're really happy about it?
What do I do? How do I feel? Or what, is there something I actually do? Like,
yeah. Do you just say, oh, that was awesome. I'll tell you what I do. I have, so
go ahead.
Just to speak to it's actually interesting because people ask me why I started this podcast. The first objective of the podcast was to get my wife to start a podcast, which I did. And I wanted her to know that like even an idiot can do this. But once that was passed, I was like, okay, do I keep this going or do I stop it? Because like I kind of achieved the objective. The second one was really that through this medium, I saw that the people were reaching out and kind of talking about how they either tried something new or they jumped into, they took a class. I was teaching for a while. When I got a testimonial that somebody had gotten a new job or gotten to do something new at work or taken on a hobby at night that they really enjoyed, that they were inspired by somebody that was on the podcast or something that I said, that was to me like my KPI, my key performance indicator of what I care about. And I save those things. That to mm-hmm. me, like I have a treasure chest of like either cards or the messages that I've gotten, because like that's what I value and that's what I'm doing it for. So it's not just that I celebrate. I actually take that and I store it somewhere so that I can go look at those things and kind of reinvigorate why I'm doing this. So that's where the question's coming from.
That's really interesting.
What do you do to celebrate?
I hear what you're saying. I don't have an organ way of keeping track of these things. It's kind of just, it's more, for me, it's the ultimate form of connection, because I was able to, it's like being a motivational speaker or a singer or some kind of performer or just, or a podcast person, whatever it is. And that one person tells you that it made a difference to them. You know, you've connected and you've done something positive with art. You have connected to someone on a deeper level, like on, that's not just superficial, because it's, you know, because a lot of the things that I've been commissioned for, people commission them because there's something about it that means something to them. Most recently, it was a chessboard that kind of, that have half pieces of the chess pieces. So it hangs up. It's not something you actually play with. It's just a piece of art for the wall. You know, the person really loves chess, their kids love chess. And so, you know, it really meant something to them. Something also I make are mezuzahs, which is, you know, what Jewish, I don't know what your listener base is predominantly, but for those that don't know, it's the cover that goes over a piece of parchment on Jewish people's homes and their doorways. And so making personalized ones of those, you know, has a very deep spiritual meaning to people. You know, one person wanted me to incorporate the Northern Lights, and I figured out how to do that and they loved it. And it's just because they're asking for something. It's not just like, oh, it's a superficial piece of art. They just want something that looks good in their house and they're excited. There is something deeper to it. Like there is meaning. It's almost like a tattoo in a sense. Like it's not arbitrary. It's thought about and it's intentional. And if I can create that for them, that it's a way of connection. For me, it's powerful. I don't have an organized way of keeping track of them, but it is emotionally certainly embedded in somewhere.
Sure. So, because I think that comes back to like, I feel like you know why you're doing this, but then you also have this question of like, okay, I should be doing SEO and I should be doing X, Y, and Z. And my only question would be, it sounds like scaling it might not be the objective here. It sounds like doing a few really awesome pieces is a lot more exciting to you than churning out hundreds of repetitive, high demand pieces of what you're building. Is that fair to say?
100%. 100%. I would much prefer to, because not only that, like churning out things, it just like, especially with resin, it doesn't happen. Like it's not a thing. Like, you know, I'm sure people do it, but for me, it's like, you can't recreate the same piece over and over again. It's like everything's a thumbprint, essentially. They're all different. They're all unique. Like, you know, if I sell something on my site, if you see something that's on my site right now, that's the only one there is. And if you want me to make another one, I make it very clear that it's going to be drastically different than the one that you see. So I prefer that, you know, if you want that one, I want you to tell me exactly what colors you like, what you liked about it, you know, so I can recreate it, but I can recreate it with your own input. Yeah, I do like to make these like random pieces, and that is what's featured in my shop at this point. But my hope more is to reach out for the people that are looking for me,
Yeah.
People that are looking for personalized pieces, special things. And I guess you could say like the things that I feature are just kind of a brainstorming board for people to see that, you know, like I'm not just the one trick pony. Like I'm not just doing like a canvas with a bunch of colors that I blew around with a hairdryer and just like everybody else is doing. Like I'm not trying to do the trend. I know I have to do the trendy things in a sense, but like I don't want to do the trendy things because it's been done and, you know, there's nothing special about it. And if people buy it, great. But like, I there's this guy and you can look him up. He posted in one of the resin groups that I'm in and he makes these waves, like tiny little wave. I don't even know how to explain it. It's like almost like you're looking at a flat sheet that like a flat blue clear sheet and like that he manipulated to look like waves. And he like posted that he just started using resin like a month ago and it's that he's pretty much obviously because he's a big surfer and you know this is the type of thing he does and his stuff is beautiful. And he posted in the group and like of course like 500 people are like, how do you do it, how do you do it, because they're all going to rip off his work, they're all going to totally start doing it. And
sure.
You know, I've seen it happen a million times with all these people that come up with these amazing ideas and they're just going to rip it off. But that's his prerogative because he's going to post a video how to do it. But you know, it's not about, it's just, it's about being original also. And that's why I like people to be like, can you do this? Like I want it exactly like this, because it's me and the customer. It's not like me and the world. Like what does the world want? Because that's too much.
Yeah.
That's too many people to figure out.
So first of all, do you have an Instagram for the business?
I do.
What is it?
I just changed the name actually because I was trying to, it's another whole drama of my life. It's called All About the Resin and it's actually spelled R-E-S-I-N. I
okay.
struggle I with these things, these silly things.
Oh, yeah. There's Ozzy so, kissing the llama.
Yeah. It's right a alpaca actually.
Alpaca. Sorry. It's incredible.
I like to keep it fun and light.
So this is awesome because first of all, you've got a following here. And the first thing I was going to ask you is like, it's clear that to be honest, if your objective is, you know, high demand pieces, not high volume, and also the customization of things, right? Then I don't think Etsy as a store with SEO is the right approach. Because if you think about how people find a store on Etsy, while there might be people who find you there, it doesn't really fit what you're looking for, which is
right. That
idea that they're coming to, you know, they're going to see a piece and then they're going to come and buy it. That is like a churn and burn kind of business. And while that might happen, somebody sees the pieces and then asks to commission you for something else, there's not a really good interface on your page on Etsy for you to kind of talk about the fact that what you do isn't make these things in high volume, but you prefer to be commissioned. There are people who do that and that is possible. And it is something I would imagine you should probably consider if that's the objective, right? Then that should be in the message that's consistent across these different mediums, which is, you know, on the one of a kind resin creations exploding with color is a great explanation, but it doesn't speak to, that's what you're offering. That doesn't speak to the why of who you are and why you're doing this. And I think that piece is a lot
that's
more, it's a lot more attractive. It goes back to, you know, the Start With Why, Simon Sinek. Have you ever seen that video?
No.
His TED talk or his, this is something that you should absolutely check out. But he had a TED talk, he wrote a book, very famous concept of starting with why. And he talks about, and I'll butcher this, but the differences between Dell and Apple, for example, was that Dell made computers and they had great service. And they talked a lot about what they built and how they serviced you. But what Apple did was talked about how they believed in a world of beautiful design. And that's why they exist as a brand. And they also happen to make computers and they happen to make iPods and iPhones and all of these other things. And then you see that people really, there's no fan base behind Dell, but there's a huge cult following of Apple because people could sign on
and
buy into the purpose, right? And what you actually want is for people to believe in what you're offering and not want the product that comes out. You want them to kind of engage with you to create something awesome and not necessarily to just pay you money for stuff.
Exactly. You got it spot on.
Awesome.
You're no imposter.
Well, so now let's talk about the next steps, because I think if we can do two things, which is one, let's talk about what does success look like, and then how could we potentially approach that for you? What would be a smart next step that might help give you more clarity of where to put your effort and energy in? Does that make sense?
Great. I'm ready.
So number one is, what does success look like, right? So you've mentioned it's not selling a ton of stuff, but it is sort of being commissioned. But let's hear it from you. What would, you know, my dad likes to put things, he's a coach for real estate agent. He's put things in a disappointing goal, a tiptoe goal, and an exceptional goal. So if, what would be disappointing for you to happen? People commissioning you for your product, or people reaching out and telling you how awesome the thing that they got was, or the pictures that they see on Instagram are? What would be not enough? How would you measure that?
I think it would just be the lack of engagement. I think lack of engagement would be disappointing, you know, making things to really give that idea stream to people and staying connected and really not getting feedback or, you know, getting any commissions out of it, because that would tell me that I'm not making things, or I'm not showing them that I can do things that they want or interested in. So that would be pretty disappointing.
So how do you, I guess, how do you measure that? If you were getting like one commission a month and people were commenting once a week on your posts, is that considered disappointing, or is that actually a good rate of success?
That would be, you mean only like one person commenting on any platform a week?
Yeah.
Because luckily right now I have a lot of engagement. So I think that if things went down and people didn't purchase, not only didn't people not comment, but I didn't get any commissions or inquiries about commissions, commission products for, you know, a month, that would be just.
Okay. But what would be like beyond zero? What would be achieving something, but it would still be disappointing? Would it be like two commissions a month, or how would you, if you
I would
were
say zero. Oh, beyond zero. I mean, so it's so funny. I mean, I'm so grateful for anything at this point, that anything beyond zero to me is disappointing. So okay. I hear what you're trying to ask of me, but.
Let's move to the next level. What's like a tiptoe goal?
Sure.
Like you feel like it wouldn't be exceptional. You wouldn't be like, I made it. This is it. This is exactly what I had always hoped for. But you'd feel like you're making progress. What would that look like?
If I had inquiries about commissions, which means, you know, someone was approaching the idea, asked me if I could do it, talked to me about it a little, but, you know, a lot of the times, like, they'll shy away from the price. You know, because I don't know, I guess that's just how people are. If I didn't have at least two of those conversations, if I had at least two of those conversations a month, that would be a step in the right direction.
Okay. And then what would be exceptional in your eyes?
Exceptional would be, at this point, to be totally honest, three commission pieces a month would be fabulous.
Okay, awesome. I'm just writing that down. So what I would urge you to do is kind of take it up one notch, which is, zero is disappointing is fine.
I would consider one a tiptoe goal, that one true commission a month. So however many conversations it takes to get mm-hmm. to one commission would be really your tiptoe goal. And then the exceptional would be that three commissions. How many conversations do you typically have to get a commission? Like, do you see every other conversation turns into one, or is it every fifth conversation?
Well, it's sales at the end of the day, because sure. the what's the term? The blank is in the follow-up, or the, I don't remember, but it's about following up, you know? And I'm not like a nudgy person. I don't like to bother people. You know, if someone wants something, then they'll reach out. But if someone approaches me, like, I should ideally, you know, be following up with them. And there's a pressure that, like, this is why I'm not in sales.
Sure.
I do director of operations things in my business. I let everybody else do the sales.
No, and that's great. I very much believe in a world where, especially in this type of business, where it's a hobby, but it's something you really are passionate and hope to grow, that you should grow it the way that you want to grow it, and not turn yourself into a salesperson because that's how you become successful, right? This isn't something you're relying on to live on. This is something you're doing to build it the way you want to build it. So if that means that you're not going to sell and it's mm-hmm. going to be less efficient than it could be, but that you're going to have the relationship that you want with your clients, then you should have the confidence that that's the right way to do it. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, no, 100%. I do, like, as organic as possible, you know, is my ideal. You know, you want people to come to you because they're interested and they're excited. You don't want to, you know, have to track them down and be like, hey, are you still interested in that
exactly.
piece you were talking about last week? Or, you know, try to renegotiate, you know, like if you feel like you came at them with too high of a price, be like, oh, hey, by the way, I can give you something smaller for this. Like, at that point, yeah. I'm not doing what I want anymore. At that point, I'm just trying to make a sale. And, you know, and then I'm like pushing something on them. It's like, then the whole like creative like connection thing is kind of lost. In the sale element, you know, so it's interesting also that I'm in these Etsy groups and I see tons of people like always commenting, you know, I'm almost at my sales goal for the month. Just need two more sales. I'm like, what the heck are you doing differently to like reach a sales goal on your Etsy group? Like, I mean, like, unless you're just like changing your tags or your keywords or something like that, like, what the heck are you doing to reach a sale? Like, all I can do is sit and wait and hope. I don't, you know, so I genuinely asked, and some people actually did respond. They said, you know, well, I actually don't make my sales. Usually I'm just hopeful.
Sure.
And then some people did say they change things around. They try to take better pictures. That's a little too involved for me right now.
Yeah. So, cause I do want to get to a couple of things that I did see, specifically in Etsy. But before we go there, I feel like, you know, what you're looking for is to have a specific type of experience with your customers, and you have clarity on what that looks like. And I think you personally, it would behoove you to move away from being too much affected by that sales goal type focus, because I don't think it's your objective. That's not how you're going to measure success. You could hit your sales goals and it could ruin your experience of this hobby, right? Of this business. And what would make this mm-hmm. an amazing business is to do it, to have people organically reaching out, passionately interested in what you have to offer, excited about working with you, and that type of thing. And I think bringing your personality to the business and having people see more of you and the passion behind these pieces is probably more of where the focus should be, and less about the actual, you know, how do I do SEO on these pages? Because I would think that seeing other posts that you have on social media that aren't on these businesses, right? Taking some of that humor and infusing it into the post and the description of the product would be a lot more exciting for people uh-huh. to engage with than like trying to sell them on a bowl and describing the bowl in a way that picks up on the SEO cues, which you could do, right? That's what the research, again, I don't have an SEO background, but the research I've done so far is that there's still a lot of room, unlike Google, which has gotten very sophisticated, Etsy, there's still a lot of room to kind of stuff keywords in some of these descriptions so that when people are searching for blue bowl or large bowl or, you know, coffee table bowl, so then you can take your artistic piece and then describe it by 100 different descriptions, and then people will find it more likely when they're searching on Etsy. But it doesn't sound like what you're looking for, because that helps you sell bowls faster. It helps you sell a phone holder faster. It's not going to give people a sense of you. It's going to get more eyes on a product so that it sells. And my thought
is very interesting, because in go ahead.
No, I want to hear your reaction to that.
Well, I was just going to say that it's because I don't have this digital marketing background and, you know, the internet and the whole becoming somebody on the internet is a very scary thing. It's very overwhelming. There's a lot of components. You just don't see that there's personality. There's room for personality. There's room for, you know, the SEO, and there's room for that. And funny, it's just like, okay, I guess you have to see it through my pieces. And, you know, what do I have, like a little area to write a description, which maybe people may or may not read. So that's a very interesting point to, you know, to try to figure out like how to actually make it, you know, that's why I utilize the Facebook group that I have to hopefully allow a little bit more for that. But maybe I have to do more videos or something. I don't know. It's all a big, scary world.
I think your Instagram page might be your best friend here, where you don't have any videos that I can see, at least in a while. You do have one there.
But yeah, no, I've never done a video. And that's totally not even related. No, I definitely need to do, because I find that people, even who are doing like legitimately like ugly things, like objectively, like have tons, and somehow they have tens of thousands of followers and all these, you know, engagements, and they don't like reading. They want to be shown. So, you know, in whatever way I can figure out how to incorporate videos into my life, I need to kind of braven up and do that.
Honestly, I don't think you necessarily have to be videos of you talking as much as it would be, instead of just a picture of the product that you've built, a story of the product that you built, and give over the passion of what
you love. Give me an example of a story. Give me an example of like what sounds interesting, you know, like pretend you're doing this and show me what that looks like, because I have no idea.
So you have this vase that is really cool looking, the crazy blue wave one. And your description of it on Instagram says, "I think I'm in love. Check out my newest vase made out of resin and glitter rocks. Listed on Etsy. So get her before she's gone, because she's oak." I don't know what that means.
One of a kind.
One of a kind. See, I'm just not cool enough to know these things. So that's like very salesy. And you just told me before, like, sales is not what you want to be doing, but that message is all about sales.
I know.
Instead, it could be like,
this is so gross of me.
it's fine. It's just, it very much sets you up as an Etsy shop and not as an artist who likes to be commissioned. Instead, it could be, I'm just going to make something up because I don't know the background of this one.
Go ahead.
But somebody reached out to me that loved the ocean. They wanted me to make them a vase. So I had a vision in my head of what could be. And I had seen at an art show, blah, 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 blah. You know, and I had just built something out of resin that combined these dark and light blue colors that I thought were beautiful, and figured out a technique to get the edges of a vase to kind of glow in white and reflect light like the rest of the vase may not. Right. Again, I'm not an artist. So this is that horrible, but something that like really describes the piece and how you took the thought that this person gave you and their background of what they cared about, and you built it into the piece. And then talking about not only the piece itself, because you're not trying to sell it to anybody, because this is already a spoken for piece, let's say, but the what you're mm-hmm. selling is the experience of engaging with you and having you deeply connected to who's commissioned you, what they care about, and building a piece for them. That sells what you're trying to sell much more than, you know, hey, check me out on Etsy, because this is oak. I think oak is a better way of calling this it. It's like,
is
woke,
it, did I write oak or is it OOAK?
It's OOAK.
Okay, good. Well, first of all, at least I know I don't have to fix that. But no, I only learned that, you know, through the, I'm a millennial.
Does that make sense?
This is oak. It's very funny. 100%. It's very, exactly. Thank you. It's very eye-opening for me because I really didn't think there was a way to incorporate personality. I just, you know, it seems just selling on Etsy is just so run of the mill and hopefully you pick up traction somehow. And, you know, I just didn't really think people really cared about a story or cared about whatever, because they see a piece, they like it, they don't. And the story behind it, like, you know, yeah, honestly, if I had to recreate that, and it would be because last year we lived in Miami and we lived next to the beach, and oh, how I miss it. And I needed, you know, that back in my life. And so that, yeah, that would definitely be how I would reinterpret that.
Yeah.
Post.
Look, people, because what'll happen, imagine what happens for the user, right? Somebody comes across you, whether they're in the resin community or they're not, right? They come across your post and they love what you're making. And it's not an Etsy shop at all. You're not an Etsy seller. What you are is an artist. You're making all of these beautiful things. They're hearing you describe them. They're seeing people are commissioning you. They're starting to get a glimpse of the world of your art, not a glimpse of your life. This is just the world of your hobby, of this mm-hmm. art that you're building. And all of a mm-hmm. sudden they find out that you have an Etsy shop, or they check out your profile and they see the link and they're like, oh, I could get one of these pieces. And when they go to the Etsy shop, they see a piece that has a story also, and they identify with that story. Now they're not just buying the piece, right? Now the piece means something, mm-hmm. and they're going to be telling people, right? Mm-hmm. We have a thing up in our, like our Etsy story was that we had a quote that we really liked. It says, first the dishes, then the revolution. I got it from my brother. Aww. And we found somebody who made these really beautiful beechwood pieces and could write whatever you wanted on them. And my mm-hmm. wife really liked the beechwood and asked the artist to, like, we commissioned her to paint onto it this message. And it's been hanging up in our house for years because it was the combination of, like, she loves the ocean. We live in Atlanta, so there's no ocean. Mm-hmm. This reminds her of that. But it also encapsulates this concept that, like, we believe in, that, like, you got to get things done before you can change the world. It's all in that one piece. So it's a whole story when people see it. I think you could have the same thing here with the different pieces. And I think that's more of what you want to be selling. Forget what you are selling and what the Etsy store is. Like, that's what you want to be. So to me, I think the best medium to get through is actually going to be Instagram, is going to be a place where you can tell that story. And Etsy might just be the place to make the transaction.
Interesting. That's very interesting. And, you know, you see on Instagram all the time, like, it's a very interesting world that we live in, because there's so much BS that people buy into. And also Instagram, for me, it's like, okay, yeah, you'll see someone having millions of followers, but at the same time, those millions of followers all want, they're all part of that, like, group, because they want that attention somehow on them. You know what I'm saying? It's like, sure. Yeah, so maybe they do have this, maybe this person that they're following has something to offer that they really enjoy. But at the same time, they're doing the same thing everybody else is doing. They're commenting, hey, love your stuff. Hey, whatever. Because they're running through the motions. So they, for their own benefit, it's all like it's all self-promoting. It's all selfish. It's all about them at the end of the day. And, you know, like, you see these other posts of these ladies and they have, like, perfect, like the lighting is perfect and staged in every single one of their pictures. And then they have this long diatribe of, I don't even know what they're talking about most of the time. And do you know what I'm talking about? These like random like ladies that just have these Instagrams and they have millions of followers. And I'm like, what are you even talking? Like, why are people following? I don't know. Like, I don't feel like reading your essay. So like, I guess you're doing something right. Maybe I don't get it. But I want to avoid that too. I don't want to get too into the entrapment of, you know, just like becoming
I hear you.
An expectation of, you know what I'm saying?
I totally hear you. But to be totally blunt, it's a really, really well explained excuse, right? You can be genuine.
No, you're right. You got to play the game.
Yeah, like this is just what it's about. And just because there's people out there being completely too self-focused, or maybe some of them are genuine, maybe some of them are not, but that doesn't have any bearing on whether you can use this platform to accomplish the dream of making this business what you want it to be for yourself, and to engage with an audience that happens to be on Instagram and maybe give them, if that is going on at the level that it seems to be, then maybe this is a genuine relief from that type of Instagram, right? Like something that's somebody's passionate about, and you're offering them something they don't have access to all of a sudden. And if you don't do it, then that's all that they have to look at on Instagram.
Right. Well, thank you for pointing that other thing out, that I'm being salesy, because I don't like that. And that needs to change immediately. It's unacceptable.
Awesome. Well, so let me give you, there are a couple more things that, just because I imagine people will be listening to this to hear about Etsy. So one thing that I thought was fascinating in terms of just keywords and that type of thing, figuring out other people to look at. So we found etsyrank.com, which does have a free trial, which you let me access your login for this. So I got to dig around in it a little bit. And it is a fascinating way to kind of look at a given keyword. I don't know if you had a chance to dig in, but you can go into the dashboard and search for a keyword like a decorative bowl. And it'll actually give you a ton of keyword ideas. And what you can then do is look at what's kind of ranking inside of Etsy, and look at actual shops that are ranking inside of Etsy on those terms. And then see what they're selling, see what's sold, see what has been. So in terms of researching, now the non-paid version, you don't get as much detail as the paid version. But here you can actually look at home decor or decorative bowl, or look at specific top sellers, top competition for specific categories, and then start to see what's moving quickly. And I think that could start to give you a sense of some of the trends. I do also know, I spoke for the Atlanta Jewelry Show recently, and I was talking to some of the jewelers there. I taught an educational course for them, and they talked about using Instagram quite a bit, looking at hashtags of various things to see what was trending, to see if there are, specifically when it came to fashion and styling of jewelry, digging around different hashtags and seeing what people are posting, what people are engaging with the most, what people are liking the most. And that was very helpful for them. It's not scientific necessarily. I'm sure you could approach it that way. I'm not sure that you need to, but that could be a really cool way. I think what you're doing now with the groups, the other artists that you're networking in, is a really great move, and seeing what might inspire you to come up with new approaches, new ways to do things, and giving that to your audience as well. So just some ideas of, you'd mentioned, you know, understanding how to look for trends. Does that make sense as different options of how you could leverage these platforms to help you find those trends?
Sure. 100%. 100%. That makes a ton of sense.
Cool. Okay. Well, this is super enjoyable for me, because it's a totally different world than I usually get to be exposed to. Deep inside of the digital marketing world, I have to say, it's fascinating. Just to see like how even an artist who doesn't want to sell at high levels still needs to get fully ingrained in the digital marketing space these days.
100%. I'm telling you, even people like me who have like no background in it and are not, you know, like graduates of fancy tech colleges and things like that, like, we have to move with these trends as well. And we have to be up to date and we have to know these things or else we'll just be lost in the shuffle. Like, I feel like I'm 80 years old sometimes when it comes to the internet, because, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh, I am my parents now, like, when it comes to the level of what I know. And, you know, you have to expose yourself to it. You can't be afraid. And, you know, that's why I approached the smart people like you.
I just know how to use Google to search for things. But thank you so much. This was a huge pleasure. And I appreciate you coming on the show.
Likewise. Thanks so much for having me.
Of course.
Wow. What an incredible conversation. As an update, I spoke with Emily recently, and after our conversation, she had taken a small break from working on growing this business to focus on school. She's done that, and now she's just getting back to focusing on a few projects and is really excited about them. And more importantly, she's approaching her art from an entirely new paradigm. So let's recap. Emily came to me to get advice about how to grow her business. Specifically, she wanted to understand the Etsy marketplace so that she could rank higher when users were searching and capture more interested buyers. Things got interesting when we took a step back and helped Emily realize that significant growth may not be the thing she really wants, and that it could actually ruin the outlet that this passion is for her. For starters, we talked about how keyword research might be the wrong approach for her, and instead the benefits of focusing on developing her own unique corner of the internet, where she tells stories around each of the pieces of art she's invested herself into, and how she can do that same thing for clients who would like similar one-of-a-kind art pieces. We explored a vision of a different reality, where discovery of her works of art happen through other media channels, and only the transaction happens through Etsy. A customer journey that fit Emily's ideal business model much better because it was less sales and more experience. We finally got to some tips for Etsy and discussed Etsy Rank, a tool that allows you to conduct keyword research. Instead of this being a tool used for ranking, we discovered how Emily could use this for identifying trends in the world of resin art and find inspiration for what she could create next. We also talked about surfing Instagram hashtags for the same purpose, to see what people are engaging with the most. In this episode, there's a great lesson for all of us, particularly entrepreneurs who are growing businesses of our own, but you could even apply it to yourself or your career. I'm going to grow this the way I want to grow it. Aggressive and salesy can work for some, but less efficient is okay too. You want to build the types of relationships and clients that you want to have when you're successful, and to build those now. Because if you grow with cheap bad clients or work that you don't love, you'll find yourself big and stuck with cheap bad clients and work you don't love. You could be making money hand over fist and ruin your life because you aren't doing the work that you were passionate about that got you into this in the first place. I'm so thankful to all of you for helping spread the word and story about yet another incredible person in our industry. There's more where this came from. If you're enjoying these stories, again, the best way to say thanks is to subscribe, share with friends, and go into iTunes and rate us 5 stars. You can follow me at Noah Omri Levin on LinkedIn and Instagram. This is Digital Marketing Life.